Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game. Now, don't worry, I have checked with the government and you can still listen to this if you are in Tier 3. I'm Kevin Day in Tier 3. Down there in Tier 2 is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. How are you, Kieran, down there in Tier 2?
Well, I went to a chip shop last night, Kevin, so I'm living a rock and roll lifestyle compared to you Tier 3 boys and girls.
Well, well, if you went after 10:05, then that is definitely rock and roll. Yeah, it's I'm going to try not to mention it or get angry about the fact that, you know, no West Ham fan can go to a 60,000 seat stadium last night on a massive footprint, but they could if they wanted to walk up and down Oxford Street without a mask on. Anyway, Kieran, it's news day. I'm just so jealous of you down there, and you don't even drink. You're a total waste of Tier 2. We should swap houses. That's what we should do. It's news day, Kieran, so let's news this thing up. And the first story is quite a big story. The first couple of stories, there's some eye-watering amounts of money, and then towards the end of the news stories, it all gets a bit film noir. We're going to end on a rainy evening in Grimsby, actually, which is it's about as film noir as you can get. The FA, Kieran, have taken out a £175 million loan from the Bank of England. And I must say, it seems a lot easier for large organisations to get loans than it is for me. So any sharks listening, do drop me a line, the usual thing, questions@priceoffootball.com. Presumably this £175 million for the FA, Kieran, is COVID-related?
Yes. And I think what you need to do, Kevin, is you've got to be able to convince your bank manager that you've made a material contribution to the UK economy. Mm-hmm. And under those circumstances, they just hand over the money.
Ah, does my accountant count as the UK economy? Because I've made a very material contribution to his Christmas.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. This is very much COVID related, because if you think about it from the FA's point of view, we've had FA Cup matches taking place with no crowds. England have been playing international matches before empty audiences, and the FA had already paid UEFA a considerable amount of money to host matches for Euro 2020, right. And those matches aren't going to take place until hopefully next summer, because I've got a ticket for England versus the Czech Republic. Right. And the FA has said it's anticipating losses of £300 million this year. It's had to make 15% of the staff redundant, which is sad news, and we know that people in all industries are being hit. So it has gone to the Bank of England, and it's been very coy about this. It was only through ferreting through some Bank of England documentation that it came to light that it looks like the loan has been taken. Now, the details in terms of when it's going to be repaid have not been made clear. I think Spurs have a similar loan, yeah. And I think they're committed to paying it sort of midway through 2021, but I suspect that there is a rollover. And this is a monetary rollover before anybody thinks anything else. In terms of the repayment date. So it's indicative. It's not just clubs, but institutions themselves, which have to borrow money under these very trying circumstances.
Did you say Spurs are paying theirs back by 2021? Because I thought we'd established that the bigger the loan, and when you're getting to this level, A, there's barely any interest, and B, the banks don't seem that bothered whether you ever pay it back at all.
Well, when it comes to Spurs commercial loans, which is the £637 million they owe to Goldman and some other of the sort of the major investment banks, that's not due for repayment until I think around about 2037. But these are emergency loans being given out by the Bank of England, which isn't a but the Bank of England, as a rule, doesn't tend to lend to companies unless the circumstances are fairly unique and clearly what we're going through at present. Whereas if you look at Spurs, Spurs is £637 million. That's the sort of traditional commercial loan. And on top of that, they've also borrowed £175 to allow them to pay the bills over the course of the next few months.
Now, if God forbid, Kieran, the Euro games don't happen at Wembley next summer and the FA Cup is in front of empty houses, what do the FA do then? Do they go for a bigger loan to pay back this loan? What happens if they can't afford to pay back this loan?
Well, if we are under those circumstances, it will come down to negotiations. You know, we could end up with the somewhat ludicrous situation of, you know, the Bank of England will have potentially have a security in respect of this loan. So the Bank of England ends up owning Wembley and St George's Park as a result of this. If, however, England can't host the games and can't host the FA Cup final and things of this nature by the middle of next summer, I think the economy will be in such a severe downturn that the Bank of England will just take a pragmatic approach and says, you know, we want the economy to somehow get through this. We will put back payment for another 12 months or another couple of years because there's nothing for the Bank of England to gain. You know, it's got no experience of running a football stadium. And it's got even less experience of running an empty football stadium, so it would be effectively acquiring a white elephant if it decided to enforce any form of security.
Right. Although it would be quite funny to see the Bank of England repossessing Gareth Southgate. now, good news we hope for Burnley fans because it looks like their £200 million takeover deal could be completed as early as this week.
Yes, and I think that there are presently two parties who are seeking to acquire Burnley. One is American-based. It's called ALK Capital. And the other is connected to Chris Farnell. Now, we've always said that if a club appears on this show, you know, once or twice, it's good. When something appears once or twice in a week, it's not normally good news. Chris Farnell is the person who was previously involved in an attempt to take over Charlton. And there are ongoing issues between him and the person who everybody thinks is the owner, Thomas Sangard. Chris Farnell is acting along with Mohamed El Kashashi. So there are two parties, by all accounts, involved in the Burnley takeover. My understanding is that AL Capital have their noses in front. The reason why I think the existing owners are keen to sell and the new owners are keen to buy by the end of this week is, of course, we've got the transfer window looming upon us. And you know, Burnley aren't in a great position towards the bottom end of the Premier League. They didn't spend any money in the summer window as such. So, you know, if these new owners do come in, capital injection, you know, Burnley, from a financial fair play point of view, have always run themselves extremely well. So there is certainly scope for the new owners to invest in quality in terms of team recruitment and things of that nature. I think the price involved is intriguing. You know, £200 million for Burnley, and this is not an insult to Burnley because I've been to Turf Moor, as you have, on many an occasion. You know, classic old-fashioned ground. You know, it's a centre point of the town itself. But Liverpool only cost £300 million a decade ago. And, you know, clearly Liverpool have a bit of a, yeah, they're a bigger stadium, they're a bigger fan base and so on. So I think this is indicative of how prices have increased over the course of the last decade. And the increasing intrigue that American investors have with football, because ultimately it's incredibly cheap to buy a football club compared to one of the American franchises, and they see ways of, horrible American word, monetizing our game.
Mm. Do you think this would be worrying news for Sean Dyche? Do you think they'd be looking for a sexier manager?
There is no sexier manager than Sean Dyche, as far as I am concerned.
Kieran, you've surprised me often on this pod in the past with answers, but that one's up there in the top 10 surprising Kieran Maguire answers.
Sean Dyche is Burnley. You know, he understands the club. He has recruited a team, I wouldn't say in his likeness, but a team which is very much as you know, you would expect a Sean Dyche team to be, hardworking, very, very well drilled, and things of this nature. to rip all that up in January when you only got 4 months of the season, you'd have to go and change an awful lot of personnel as well as Sean Dyche. So my understanding, he is in fact central to the takeover.
Interesting.
Because he's held in such high regard, and rightly so.
Well, yes, he's held in high regard by you and I and by Burnley fans and football fans in general. But as we've established in the past, Kieran, people who come in and buy football clubs at any level don't necessarily share that football knowledge. And, you know, if Frank de Boer is wandering about thinking I might like a return to the Premier League, these people's heads are easily turned, aren't they? So I'm not as convinced as you are. By the way, you mentioned Charlton there, Kieran, their owner, Thomas Sandgaard. We have put in a request to Thomas Sandgaard for an interview, and he has very kindly agreed. In fact, he bit our hand off, which I'm really quite interested about, because he struck. There was the New York minute is supposed to be the shortest time period in the world, but this period between the lights going green and somebody behind you honking, it was almost eclipsed by the Thomas Sandgaard replied to the email saying, "Do you want to come on the show?" Yes. So hopefully we will get Thomas on before Christmas. If not, it'll be shortly after. And I think it's going to be one of those occasions when we might invite Charlton fans to send some questions as well, because that's something to look forward to. Something to look forward to for Everton fans as well, hopefully. Now, Farhad Moshiri, Everton's owner, is considering investing another £250 million into Everton. Now, Kieran, is that investing or is that giving to?
To a certain extent, they're the same thing when it comes to Everton, because Everton announced their financial results on Friday, which were the third highest in Premier League history, only behind Chelsea in the year that Abramovich acquired them.
Wow.
And Manchester City the year after they were acquired by Sheikh Mansour. So, you know, eye-watering numbers. Farhad Moshiri has already put £400 million into Everton. And it looks as if this further investment, which will take his stake in the club. Originally, he bought 49.9%, but these are going to be fresh shares, which will take his investment to beyond 90%. Is part of his long-term vision for the club. So he's been incredibly benevolent to date. I suspect that some of this money is linked to the Bramley Moor dock proposals in respect of the stadium. That is moving slowly forwards. It probably wasn't helped where the Liverpool mayor Joe Anderson isn't exactly popular with the law at present, having been questioned by the police along with Derek Hatton.
Yeah.
So, and Joe Anderson has been very keen on the Bramley Moor dock, but you know, hopefully that those two things are completely independent of one another. The Everton accounts, they had some interesting nuggets. But they got £30 million for the option to have naming rights for the new stadium. That's not even the naming rights for a stadium for which planning approval has not yet been given. Sort of reading between the lines, I think that allowed them to sack Marco Silva, because that cost them over £6 million. And they had £26 million worth of player write-downs, which I presume includes the likes of Cech Tosin, who was at your place for a while, wasn't he, at the end of last season?
He was in our physiotherapy room for quite some time at the end of last season at Palace, yes.
Yes, so, I don't think he's quite delivered expectations, along with the likes of Moser Keane. And they've had a sort of a fairly scattergun approach to player recruitment, and therefore they've had to write down large sums of money in respect of their signings. But it does indicate that Farhad Moshiri is there for the long term, and he has a vision. He wants to break into the big six. He wants Everton to be competitive, and the only way you can do that is to have a stadium which is more state of the art than Goodison. And you know, as we both have said in the past, as old fashioned football fans, we love Goodison. Putting on your business head, you can see that there's issues if you want to make a lot of money out of the place.
Yeah. Well, and the new stadium does look spectacular. But can I just confirm, Kieran, double check, which is a tautology. You said those figures, and I think even Everton fans would be surprised, the third highest figures posted in Premier League history.
Yeah, in terms of losses, yes.
Oh, in terms of losses, right, OK. Right.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I think Manchester City were 197, Chelsea were around about 152. So, yeah, 140 million is, wow. it is that's a lot of money per hour, let alone per year.
Yes, talking of stadia, I'm not sure whether I should perhaps start to give Guy more credit than I have been giving him in the past few weeks, because there does seem to be some sort of sense to the logic, the order of these questions at the moment. I'd sometimes wonder if he adopts the famous David Bowie lyric cut-up technique, just puts random words into a hat and throws them out and see what happens. But to be fair, recently he's done a sterling job. He must need a new gold car. The liquidator of Old Co Rangers has launched a £29 million court case against the administrators Duff and Phelps over their refusal to sell Ibrox Stadium.
Yes, and this is a bit weird because, we've had sort of discussions before that, you think about your industry, in public, you tend to sort of say nice things about, other performers, other comedians and so on, and unless you're Stuart Lee or Frankie Boyle, who that's part of their act, so we understand that. So this is one firm of accountants effectively having a pop at another. Rangers had problems in around about 2012, which resulted in the Old Co going into there was administration, there was liquidation, and the way that it works is that a firm of administrators tries to run a business and sell off assets, and then liquidators come in to sort of mop up whatever's left over. And what we're seeing here is that the liquidators, who are this firm called BDO, they say that the administrators could have sold Ibrox, the training ground, and some of the players. And if you think about what we've seen in respect of Wigan, the administrators there, what have they done? Well, they sold off the training ground to Preston North End. They've sold all the players. And that's why Wigan are now at the arse end of League One. But that didn't appear to be the case, or that's the allegation which is being made by the liquidators. And they say that the administrators owe almost 30 million quid as a result, and that money, if it is recovered, would then go off to be used to pay the unsecured creditors of the Old Co Rangers. So it's going to be a court case which will come up in May 2021. No doubt the pub lawyers of both Celtic and Rangers will be already sharpening their knives, because they do enjoy a good spat about anything to do with each other's club. As always, the only thing we can say with confidence with regards to this is the lawyers will get rich.
Oh, you didn't say silver-tongued. You've ruined someone's bingo game. Somebody's pen was hovering over there. I knew this news story would cause me some confusion, and it has. Were Duff and Phelps legally obliged to sell the stadium? And if so, why did they not? And even if they weren't, why did they not anyway? When it seems that their job is solely to get as much money from assets as possible.
Well, their legal obligation is to try to sell the company as a going concern, i.e. as a trading entity, and to make an orderly sale of any assets which they're not in urgent need of. So they weren't forced to do so, but sometimes, having run a few of these things myself, where you've got a company with a few assets dotted around, you sell off bits and pieces to allow you to fund the continued existence on a day-to-day basis of the company. Now, clearly, this is going back to 2012, so it is old ground. And it does make you wonder why it's only now coming to court in 2021, because BDO, I think they originally sort of raised their unhappiness 3 years ago, and this is one of these horrendous cases that just drags and drags.
And you say that if BDO win this case, the money will go to creditors. None of this will go to BDO. BDO are doing this out of the kindness of their heart and out of a concern for the creditors that have lost money.
Well, if you look at BDO, they are in possession of Silver Tongues themselves as a firm of accountants. So, you know, we have spoken about you know, what's happened at Bolton and Wigan and so on. You know, the going rate is, you know, the thick end of, you know, £400 an hour for these people. So, you know, they will have a clock running. With regards to this, but, you know, they will say if we recoup, you know, 30 million quid, then that will more than cover our fees. Right. Just
now, still in Scotland, and for those of you listening thinking, wow, my God, Guy really is on form, this was originally the last question and I moved it up, so we had two Scottish questions next to each other. Still in Scotland, Kieran, the police have been alerted to financial irregularities at St Mirren, which sounds rather sinister.
It does a bit, yes. By all accounts, this was discovered during an audit, and, you know, as an accountant, you know, I'm fully aware of what auditors do. I'm not sure whether fans are aware or listeners are aware that actually that the majority of the clubs in League One and League Two and in the Scottish League are not audited. So you have to take their accounts with a leap of faith on occasions.
Can I just jump in there, Kieran? Because you had a Twitter exchange with somebody the other day who works in finance, who was absolutely astounded to discover that clubs in League One and League Two in Scotland were not audited. Literally, you had to explain it to him two or three times that you hadn't got this wrong. So I'm sure he's not the only one who would be surprised to hear this.
Yeah, under legislation here in the UK, I think around about 95% of companies now are no longer legally obliged to have an audit. Now, some will do so because of banks' insistence. Right. Some will do so out of a choice of governance. But there is no obligation to do so. And it all is to do, you know, you and I, we've always said that size doesn't matter, Kevin. But on this particular occasion, this is linked to the Companies Act 2006, which does strict rules as to thresholds below which audits don't have to take place. And it's something which I feel a little bit uncomfortable about. You know, I appreciate at present, all clubs are looking to save money, so, you know, an audit would be additional costs. So you can understand them not wanting that. But we've also said that football clubs do have this unique place in the history and the culture and the heritage of this country, and perhaps therefore they warrant a little bit of extra of monitoring, especially if they are going to the likes of the Premier League and government for to claim that they need financial assistance. So it's a double-edged sword. The reason why St Mirren were being audited may have been linked to the fact that they are going to become a fan-owned club. So this is actually part of the due diligence involved. And the allegations, and they are only allegations at present, things which arose during the conduct of this audit, was non-payment of taxes to HMRC, nothing to do with player-related items, which seems a bit strange. I don't know that we could be sort of going into the realms of the Sopranos here, and anybody familiar with Sopranos, you know, that jobs for people that didn't appear to do any work was a common feature of things of that nature. Also, some of the commercial arrangements of St Mirren did seem a bit uncomfortable, and This is, sadly, you know, more common in football and the football industry than people may be aware. I mean, I can't go into specific details, but one of my former students, I got her a job with a football institution, and she discovered quite a big fraud, and she was encouraged to sweep it under the carpet. Really? And just move on. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you know, we've got enough money to cover this. Don't take this any further. So, you know, things of this nature do arise, and quite often we don't get to hear about them. The only reason why we've heard of this one is now the police are involved, and somehow it's leaked through to the media as well.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager, or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Probably from the police, in my experience. But when this situation occurs, Kieran, and the police are alerted to financial irregularities, as Guy so nicely put it, is there one person responsible at the club then that is deemed responsible for these financial irregularities, or is it, you know, would the auditors be giving them a list of people they should be talking to, or is it simply a question that the police are now able to look at all the books, or they pass everything to HMRC? What's the process here?
Well, presumably the auditors were talking to the financial controller or the club secretary, have been through the books, have asked some questions, and have decided. And this is by all means in conjunction with the club. So, right, you know, it could be that the club itself was unaware of what was taking place. Has decided to pass these matters onto the old bill, as we lovingly refer to them in South London.
And it is
the right process. How that's subsequently leaked to the press, we both know that if people are concerned, it's one of the ways of using the press is to make things slightly more transparent than they would be otherwise.
Yeah, I'm not sure we should be dealing with rumours, Kieran, but we just did there, and we're going to in this story as well, because there are whispers, and just whispers, Kieran, hints of whispers, that Sheffield Wednesday's players are not being paid in full.
Yes, this is a story which again has come from the newspapers. Now, again, there are stories that in November 2019 and June 2020, players didn't get their wages on time. The latest story is that some of the players are only getting the first £7,000 a month. Now, for you and I, £7,000 a month, we'd be pretty happy with. Well, certainly me as a teacher. And they're getting the balance later. Now, I did some digging into Sheffield Wednesday's figures. Now, they're not up to date because Sheffield Wednesday haven't published their accounts for the last 2 years. But you know, on average, players are on around about 70 to 75 grand a month. So they're only getting 10%. And then the story appears to indicate that they were getting it a few weeks later from another source. So it all seems very, very, very strange. So the local newspapers, you know, one of the players was up for one of the press talks last week, Dominic Iorfa, and he just batted it straight back and said, this is a confidential matter. I'm not prepared to talk about it. Now, if it was bollocks, he would simply say,
it's
bollocks. Yeah. So, you know, by exception, it would appear to indicate that things aren't as groovy as we would like them to be in Sheffield Wednesday and all clubs. You know, nobody wants clubs to be in financial distress. So, watch this space.
Yeah, I should have researched this properly because the name of the Sheffield Evening paper escapes me. It might be the Star, but
it is the Star.
But they've got a very good reputation for hard journalism. So this is not one of your local free newspapers. This is a proper regional newspaper who wouldn't print this story without having some facts to stand it up, is my guess.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, I've dealt with the guys from the Star on a regular basis, and you know they play it down the middle. Yeah, you know, they're not out to stir things. It's not in their interests. You know, some of them are Sheffield Wednesday fans, so they wouldn't want to do that anyway. Once again, transparency, being upfront. These are all the things that we want in terms of good governance in the game. You know, Sheffield Wednesday, they've had a 6 points deduction. There were issues in terms of the sale of the the sale of Hillsborough, which has been sold to another company. Has that other company paid for Hillsborough? That is still uncertain, and that sale took place 2 years ago.
Yeah, you can almost feel sorry for Dominic Iorfa, can't you? He's sitting there waiting for the questions about the new manager and the style of football, and is suddenly confronted with, is it true you're not getting paid? South Yorkshire to South London, Kieran. Don't blame Guy for that one. That was me. I find this slightly odd, this story, Kieran, I have to say. Rugby league side London Broncos are going to move into AFC Wimbledon ground, Plough Lane, the new ground, of course. Move into sounds a lot more permanent than play at.
Well, yes, they're signing a 10-year deal to use the facilities. So the London Broncos presently play in Ealing, and they're getting crowds of around about 2,000 a match, which is fairly decent. We've often spoken about clubs needing to sweat the assets. And again, it's a horrible management speak phrase, but it's all to do with turning a main asset of the club, which is, of course, the stadium, from something which is being used 25 to 30 days a year in terms of hosting football matches to a multiple of that. So if London Broncos do move in, it will allow AFC Wimbledon to generate more money. They have borrowed to fund the changes at Plough Lane to allow them to move back to their spiritual home. So as you can see it from their point of view, any additional money coming in will allow them to pay money out, because I think the first interest payments on the Wimbledon bonds are probably due around about next February, and the more revenue sources they have, the better.
Would this be something, Kieran, that was discussed in the planning stages of the stadium, that perhaps London Broncos approached AFC Wimbledon two or three seasons ago and said, look, we'd be interested in moving in if you build this stadium?
Yes, because when AFC Wimbledon would have approached, would it have been Merton Council?
Yep.
Is that the right one?
Yep.
So when they would have approached the council, that it would have been with, in terms of getting approval for X number of events taking place a year. So presumably they were looking for some form of multi-sport arrangement at the time. London Broncos must have been in the bidding, or certainly one of the people they were talking to, and this has allowed them to now go ahead with this deal. Because it could have been, if Merton Council had said maximum of 30 events a year, that would have put the kibosh on this.
A good old-fashioned account story, Kieran. Newport County have published their accounts for 2019. What do they tell us?
What they tell us, and the reason why I suggested that we put this one in, was just how wonderful the FA Cup is.
Oh, okay.
It is transformational for a club such as Newport. So in 2018-19, Newport, they beat Leicester City in the third round. And I remember watching that match on TV.
Yeah, okay.
And that was proper old school turn up. And you were cheering along for a team where you've got no long-term emotional relationship, because it was David versus Goliath. So they were successful there. They then beat Middlesbrough in the fourth round, and they ended up being knocked out by Manchester City in the fifth round. But this has turned them around. It's added an extra £1 million to their bottom line. They've gone from £120,000 loss to an £880,000 profit. So when people turn around and say nobody's interested in the FA Cup, I think that's wrong. I mean, I still look forward to the draw. I don't look forward to it as much as I used to when I was a kid, and probably a bit like you, I can probably name every single FA Cup final of the 1970s, but I would struggle to name the last five. But there is still this romance attached to the FA Cup for the smaller clubs, especially if it allows them to play. Newport played Leicester City, who had just won the Premier League a couple of years earlier and got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and now they're turning up in Newport. So there is still this element of romance, but from a financial point of view, it is still a game changer. It will allow the club to reset its finances substantially for a couple of years.
Yeah, I was trying to explain to Ed the other day that there was a time when you listened to the third round draw on a radio at school on Monday lunchtime. He just, these are all, lunchtime is a concept he has struggles with, to be perfectly honest. But actually listening, gathered around a radio within 2 meters of each other, this, he just couldn't understand that concept at all. But that's how it used to be. And then it was very, very exciting. And like you, I think it's probably from about 2002 onwards, I wouldn't be able to name you the FA Cup winners, but for all the years before that, I'd be. And those FA Cup games as well were brilliant to watch on TV because the atmosphere came through on TV. And a friend of mine, a fashion designer, designed Newport's kit last season. And, oh, wow. And he's a Newport fan. And it's just the best job he's ever had. He got to design Newport's kit, which is a brilliant, brilliant job. Now, Kieran, as I alluded at the start of this pod, which is looks like it's going to be a little bit shorter than some others, but that's good because it means the world's not quite going to hell in a handcart like it normally is when we do the news. We started with stories involving hundreds of millions of pounds. We end with two slightly more tawdry stories, I think we should say, Kieran, down at the down at the film noir end, as we hinted. Now, we know that we now know that Alan Shearer hired a private detective to find the financial advisor who owed him more than £200,000. How do we know, Kieran?
Well, it's, as always, it gets it's this one's actually gone to court,
right? Okay,
and therefore it gets reported in the press. So this is to do with a guy called Kevin Neal, who I think was a former insurance salesman, yeah, who then decided to become a financial advisor. And again, we've covered Mr. Neal on a few occasions in recent times. He's also being sued by seven former Newcastle United players after, by all accounts, encouraging them to invest in teak. Rather than sort of stocks and shares, which is a dangerous thing to do. He came to an out of court settlement with Alan Shearer, and by the looks of it, he didn't pay. And so this was sort of heading towards court, and he was then claiming that as a result of COVID, he was stuck in Spain, and also he had a swollen foot.
All of which affect your ability to use your bank account to swap money internationally. Yes, I understand that. The amount of times I've used a swollen foot argument, I'm sorry, Nat West, I would happily pay you back, but this foot, oh, it's an agony.
So as a result of that, he was unable to attend court. So Alan Shearer thought he was telling porkies here. So Alan Shearer got hold of a private detective who then managed to find Kevin Neal loading up his car outside a supermarket in Watford.
Oh, dear.
This is Hazel territory, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a reference that will mean nothing to most people listening, but there you go. But yes, it is, yes.
And as a result of that, This guy, Kevin Neal, who's also been banned from being a company director for 6 years, so expect him to be turning up at a football club soon, trying to take it over, has had to go and pay a further £56,000 in costs to the £232,000 that Alan Shearer was chasing him for. And I say, well, you know, fair play to Alan Shearer that he could spot a wrong'un at the other end of the phone. I hope he just gets his money quick, and this guy gets whatever is due to him, yeah, from the other players as well.
Quite right. So yeah, you made that sound a bit more threatening than it should have been, Kieran, to be honest. But you can take the boy out of South London, Kieran, can't you? But talking of unexpected visitors to football grounds, Kieran, this is a story that I genuinely thought was a joke when I first read it because it caused a lot of activity amongst Grimsby fans on social media, that a convicted fraudster is apparently looking to invest in Grimsby Town.
Yes. And this is a bloke called Alex May, who attended Blundell Park on Saturday, and he'd previously tried to buy Notts County, but he's also been put inside for 6 years. No fraud is pleasant, but this is at the arsehole end of fraudster activity. And what he'd do, he would target the elderly. He's a con artist, steal people's identities of elderly people, and then use that to sort of pretend to be them and remortgage their houses.
Wow.
So he'd, yeah, by all accounts, he'd made £3.5 million from this, and was living a champagne lifestyle. So apparently £1 million was lost at the casino in Mayfair. And Grimsby originally said, or somebody originally said, well, if everybody's entitled to make a mistake. And he's seen the light. He's even changed his name. Now,
good for him. Well done.
he doesn't want people to know that he was originally known as Alec Capicagna. So now he's going by the name of Alex May. He would not be, I think his outstanding conviction is not unspent. So he would have failed the owners and directors test, but he could still put in some form of investment if it was below a particular threshold. And there was talk about him putting in up to £1 million for shares. And I'm thinking, well, hold on, where's this money potentially come from? You know, if it's some little old dears in Gorton, you know, I'm bridling at this one. But the good news appears to be, as a result of this story being flagged, and you know, hats off to, you know, we've been talking about people in local newspapers. I think this is the Grimsby Telegraph. Fair play to them for running this, for spotting this story. It looks as if John Fenty, the Grimsby owner, has rejected the offer to buy into the club. You know, I hope that they continue with that. I've got a huge affection for Ian Holloway, who's at the club, as a human being. I think, you know, Ian's a wonderful guy, and I wouldn't want him anywhere near the likes of Alex May.
Yeah, well, again, you made that sound more threatening than it should be, but in this case, I heartily endorse that sentiment. And also, John Fenty, I imagine, would have been sensible enough to look at social media and. I mean, it ranged from bemusement to anger, and it struck me that there was a lot of Grimsby fans who said, I won't go if this guy takes over. And it's astonishing that he was even allowed to be considered. But there you are, Kieran, that's football. And that's an entire news pod, Kieran, that we've got through without mentioning you-know-who, our friends at... I don't even want to say it, Kieran, because for once, I believe we have got through a pod without mentioning that team in the East Midlands who play in white shirts. And needs to be managed by Brian Clough. So that's good news, isn't it?
There is. And so we had actually written this script. And
Who's we? You take, listen, I don't mind you taking credit for all the brain stuff, but I'm taking credit for the half-assed notes that constitute the script for this thing.
Well, it looked like this was today's show. And then my very good friend Matt Slater at The Athletic, He's just brought out a story about doubts over the proposed takeover of Derby County.
Oh, no.
So we thought we were going to have a full week without Derby. And it turns out that Sheikh Khalid bin Zayed bin Sakur Al Nahan, who could probably get his money back if he sells shirts with his name on, still owes a law firm more than 500 grand for work he did trying to buy Newcastle United last year. And the law firm involved are getting a bit arsey.
Right.
So this could put a spanner in the works. So, you know, Sheikh Khaled has, by all accounts, not settled the bill, which doesn't look too clever. Derby are presently at the bottom of the Championship. They've just sacked their manager. They haven't published their accounts, which, as you know, for 2019, which gets them a minority step. Yeah. They've got an outstanding legal case from their former captain, Richard Keogh, following the night out with the lads incident last year when they sacked him. And there is a loan from Michael Dell, of the Computer Fame company, which is believed to be around about £30 million. You know, how is that going to be settled as well? Is there a change of control clause, which often happens when new owners come into a company, which would mean that Michael Dell would be entitled to his money back straight away? So it is looking not as smooth sailing as I think everybody had hoped. So, and again, you know, Matt Slater is a very, very thorough journalist. So, you know, this wouldn't be nonsense. And you know, as one of those professions which does take stick some of the time, you know, we've had the benefit of three or four stories today purely on the back of, you know, these guys doing their job well, and hats off to all concerned.
Yes, I'm sorry, Derby fans. I really am sorry. I didn't know that was coming, but hopefully by Christmas, you never know, we'll have some good news. And, you know, maybe even by Sunday's pod, because Monday's pod, we do it on Sunday, it's out on Monday. Our next pod is our questions pod. So if you have any questions at all about football finance, if you want questions specifically about Derby, that's fine. We'll handle all those. It's questions@priceoffootball.com. And we'll also be giving another shout out to a batch of club fans who are going above and beyond in helping the local community at this time of crisis. We will see you then. Kieran, I'll leave the final message, as ever, to you.
Okay, folks. Well, thank you once again for the feedback. Even the one-star review from...
The Palace fan that you got.
From a Palace fan, from Palace fan Dino, who thinks I'm left-wing. I drive a Range Rover. I've got a white Range Rover, the same as Jack Grealish, although mine hasn't got quite as many bumps in it.
I don't know what made me laugh more, the fact that you shared that with me, or the fact that the guy said, do you know this bloke? Yeah, of course I know him. He happens to support the same football club as I do. Naturally, no, I don't know Palace Dino. but yes, it was a lovely snotty, and he won't be listening. You made that quite plain that he won't be listening because of your views on racism that he didn't share.
But things like, I didn't even say anything I can recall. I go to great lengths to never say anything.
That's not true. But anyway, how long have you been driving a white Range Rover for? What happened to the Audi?
Oh, I've got that as well.
Holy shit. Okay. Off you go. Carry on.
Right, well, thank you for the reviews. Even Palestino, we've got to learn. We've got to listen to people that listen to the show. So we take everything on board. If you could subscribe, if you could give us a 5-star review as well, that'd be even better because it helps us in the charts. Doesn't matter what you say. You could say you would rather the show was done by, you know, Anne Widdecombe and the Archbishop of Canterbury. It really makes no difference to us. We can take that. But apart from that, look after yourselves. If you've not spoken to a friend recently, tell you what, pick up the phone and give them a call, because there's lots of people at this time of year who are not going to be seeing their family, not going to be seeing their friends. And if we leave it for somebody else to make that phone call, then it's never going to be made. So other than that, bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Stay safe. The Price of Football. Price of Football.